today. We're going to talk about a serious issue that impacts women. It impacts men. It impacts children. It impacts families. It impacts the community. It impacts the criminal justice system. It impacts the church. It impacts social services. It's called domestic violence. It's not just a woman's thing. It's a community thing. And this all started because the Ivies of Alpha Kappa Alpha, they're going to have a regional conference here in Indianapolis the first part of next month. And Alpha Kappa Alpha, the sisters, domestic violence is one of their focuses as a national sorority, as a regional convention. And so we kind of heard about it. They got an event coming up on April the 4th, the day that Dr. Martin Luther King was tragically murdered in Memphis, and this focuses on domestic violence. So they've kind of helped us out. So we've got a collection of dynamic women and a brother, but a brother of the gospel, amen, who is in the house, and we're going to have a serious conversation about domestic violence. If you've got questions about it, if you've been victimized by it, if the services haven't been there for you or your family, I got the resources in the house. We have with us from my good friend, Lady Vivian Fennell, who several years ago started as the founder and CEO of Not Two Believers Like Us. They work in our community, in the church community, helping to shatter the silence of domestic and family abuse. I have from our Marion County Prosecutor's Office, the Executive Director of Domestic Violence Affairs, Linda Major. We have from the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence, Carrie Blomquist, their legal director. They work for the prevention and elimination of domestic violence until it ends, working in prevention, legislative advocacy, public awareness, and advocate training and legal assistance. From the Domestic Violence Network, Executive Director Julie Marsh is in the house. Their mission is to end domestic violence by engaging the community through advocacy, education, and collaboration. From Safe Family for Children, this group we're going to learn about, we have Tracy Mitchell Strong. Safe Families for Children offers sanctuary to thousands of kids, minimizing their risk for abuse or neglect and giving parents the time and tools they need to help their families strive. We have from Salvation Army, Ruth Lilly, Women's and Children's Center, Dina Simpson, Associate Director. Oh, we also have from Not Two Believers Like Us, I got the guy in the house, pastor, great pastor of the great Pilgrim Baptist Church, Senior Pastor, Reverend Leroy Wadlington is here. Sherry Curry is kind of helping us out from AKA and on our live line from all the way up in Hammond, Indiana, where she's the Associate Professor of Psychology at Purdue University. We got a psychologist who's going to kind of help us out. She's also the Central Regional Director of AKA, Dr. Giselle Casanova. So, ladies and pastor, welcome. Glad to have all of you. Let me start, first of all, from the prosecutor's office point of view. Linda Major, and I got to remind everybody, since I have a lawyer, a prosecutor in the house, she cannot comment on any active cases or cases that are on appeal because I don't want the Supreme Court coming after me. Linda Major, from the prosecutor's office perspective, how serious is the problem of domestic violence here in the Indianapolis area? Is it going up, down? Where is that?
Well, it's very serious. I think it's always been a problem here in Marion County. I think, fortunately, a lot more people are reporting it now than used to. Mm-hmm. I don't know if actually the numbers are going up, but I can tell you that our police reports are going up, the number of reports are going up, but whether or not it's happening more or less is very difficult to say. Our office's focus is on those cases that come through, making sure that we focus on offender accountability and victim safety.
Is it the cases all the victims women and the alleged perpetrators men, or are there instances where men are the victim?
Absolutely. We have cases where men are the victim. Over probably 90% of our cases involve women who are victims of domestic violence. That doesn't necessarily mean that only 10% of men are experiencing it. It does mean, though, that maybe 10% of the men are coming through Marion County Prosecutor's Office's victims of domestic violence.
Julie Marsh, from your perspective at Domestic Violence Network, how would you characterize the situation with domestic violence here in Indianapolis, here in this area?
Well, I would agree with Linda. I think that we're having more and more cases that are reported, And we seem to have more voices from outside of the traditional domestic violence service provider community saying we want to be part of the solution and help with it. So I'm talking about schools, churches, service clubs, and even folks in neighborhoods and neighborhood associations are starting to say, you know, what can we do within our own communities? So it's an issue. It continues to be something that we as an entire state and country need to focus on, because that's what's going to, that attention is what's going to bring an end and to these horrific crimes that are happening.
Lady Fennell, you've been out here on the firing line, you know, particularly working with, you know, churches in our community. How would you define right now the problem of domestic violence?
It is ongoing, and it is almost a pandemic, because especially in the faith community, because of the lack of wanting to accept that individuals of faith would treat each other than the vows of the Lord. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you know, there's a lot of work to do. Not to Believers Like Us has been around for 10 years. It'll be 10 years in October. And we still have pastors. There was a young man or a perpetrator that ran his car into a young lady's car, his ex-girlfriend, and killed someone that was with her, not her. And one of our pastors in the city said it was because he was angry. Anger has nothing to do with that. Mm. That was selfishness. And our pastors really need to learn and understand, do not place this in places of anger. Place it where it should be.
Let me ask Tracy Mitchell Strong, Safe Families for Children, new organization, at least new to me and maybe many of our listeners. What are you all? How do you fit in this whole solving the problem of shattering the silence and dealing with domestic violence?
Well, first of all, let me say thank you for this opportunity, Amos, because a lot of individuals do not know about Safe Families for Children. In actuality, Safe Families for Children is a faith-based social service organization. Mm. We actually derived out of Chicago, in which they were established in 2002. Here in Indianapolis, Indiana, the Indianapolis chapter was established in 2008. We received a $500,000 grant from Oprah to get started.
Oprah gave y'all some money.
Oprah gave us some money.
About time, yes. I found somebody got some of Oprah's money. Lord.
But our primary goal and focus is to assist parents in crisis situations and to provide respite care for their children. We service kids from 0 to 18 years of age. We are able to put them into host homes, which are derived out of the churches that we are currently working with. Our host families go through extensive training. They go through fingerprinting. They go through criminal history checks. And also we have to send in information to the Department of Child Services just to make sure that these individuals that want to host children do not have any abuse or neglect on their records.
239-1310. 239-1310. This afternoon's name is, we're talking about domestic violence for the full 2 hours. Your opportunity to call, because one of the things these organizations want to do, they want to find out, you know, if folks are falling through the cracks, they want to know about it. If the system is not working, this is the opportunity to find out what's not working, how to make it work. 239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's names. If you don't want your voice used, send me an email at praiseindy.com, or you can send me a text message at 85620, keyword Amos, 85620, keyword Amos. Let me bring in Dr. Giselle Casanova, you know, who's on our live line up at Purdue University Calumet. Dr. Casanova, first of all, welcome. Why is AKA, why are the Ivies involved and engaged in this issue?
Well, good afternoon, Amos, and thank you for having me. Alpha Kappa Alpha is interested and involved in bringing this issue to awareness in the Indianapolis, and bring more awareness in the Indianapolis community, because we are a service organization that was started by and for women. Mm-hmm. And this is, domestic violence is an issue that affects women and girls. And so, of course, we want to make sure that when we come into a community, we bring services for the community. Mm-hmm. Most of the time when individuals think about Alpha Kappa Alpha, they hear the word sorority, they think about parties and a social organization. Right. But we want Indianapolis to know that we are a service organization. We were founded on based on a foundation of service to all mankind. And my belief is when we come into a community, while we are there for a conference and for our learning, we want to make an impact in the community as well. This is a serious issue, and we want to bring national attention to it.
Dr. Casanova, I have to ask you, with your day job as an associate professor of psychology up at Purdue Calumet, from the psychology point of view dealing with domestic violence, where does mental health, mental fitness, mental illness, and psychology fit into all of this?
This is a mental health issue. It's a very serious mental health issue. And one of the things that individuals, I think they don't, many people don't see this as a mental health issue. Mental health is tied into this in one of two ways. Some of our individuals who are go through, individuals who are victims, or sometimes I like to refer to them as survivors because that sheds a different light on the situation. Survivors or victims of domestic violence, as a result of having gone through what they've dealt with, they then may experience mental health issues. Then on the other hand, we have individuals who have been victims of domestic violence because of the fact of them having mental health issues. When one has, you're dealing with, you're struggling with, or coping with a mental health issue, that makes you more susceptible to individuals who may take advantage of that fact because you're not at the point where you can necessarily think about the, you know, cope with this particular situation or have skills that will help you deal with this or get out of this situation because you're struggling with other issues as well.
How much of this also is the phobia that mental health and psychology, the phobia that exists among many in African American communities?
That's huge. That is a huge issue with people of color. We have a history culturally that when we have a problem, we keep it in our families. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about our problems to other people because you're going to bring shame, dishonor, disgrace to your family name. And we, even in this day and age, we still have an issue with that.
Is it also that in popular culture, we don't see persons of color going to a psychologist or a psychologist that's persons of color? If you look at Hollywood culture, you're always seeing whites go to the psychiatrist shrink, whether it's a TV show or a movie. You never see that in our culture. I have not seen the Real Housewives of Atlanta go see a black psychologist. Several of them need to go.
I'll share with you, when I was considering my major, my grandmother asked me, why do you want to do that? You know, she was proud of me going to school, going to college, right, and moving on, you know, with my degree and so forth, but just didn't see the need. And this is a woman who was born and raised in Louisiana and didn't understand the need for this type of degree in our community. So we're not portrayed in the media as in terms of us going, but we also, there's very, very rarely do you see an African-American psychologist.
That's true.
Portrayed in the media as well.
239-1310, 239-1310. Let me bring Dina Simpson, Associate Director of Salvation Army's Ruth Lilly Women and Children's Center. When we talk about domestic violence, we always hear about the victim and the perpetrator, and we don't hear, particularly if it's a family that involves children, how all of that impacts the kids.
It's a very complex issue, and it very much impacts the children coming in. We serve about 800 families per year just in shelter alone, take newborns to 18-year-olds. And there's it's just not the parents or the partners that are involved with it. It involves the children from the housing perspective to the education to the basic food, clothing, and shelter to the mental health concerns, addictions, all of that.
Does the category domestic violence, the things the domestic violence community deals with, does this deal with an adult that abuses a child? Is that domestic violence? Because I think sometimes the perception is domestic violence, a man beating up on a woman.
Again, that's not the definition. It's not a man beating up on a woman. It's partner violence. It's the uncle abusing the niece. It's so much more than just
so we need to think of it in a broader sense.
Yes.
It is one individual abusing another, period.
Yes. Yes.
239-1310. 239-1310 is after the news names. Let me get into Carrie Blomquist, legal director for Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. What's the coalition? What do you all do?
The Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence is a statewide umbrella organization over all of the other domestic violence direct service providers in the state of Indiana. We provide training, peer review. I myself am the legal director, so I do a lot of legal trainings. I'm a lawyer just like Linda is, not just like Linda is, but we do a lot of the same kinds of work. I also teach a domestic violence law class at the law school here.
What is the law?
What is the law on domestic violence?
Yeah, what is the law?
Well, it depends on if you're talking civil or criminal.
There's a civil part?
Absolutely. There's a very real civil impact.
Well, let me go to the civil, because I think people understand, all right, if I'm the victim and my partner or, you know, somebody victimizes me, that's battery, that's hitting, that could be worse than that, that's intimidation, they understand criminal. You know, that's police, handcuffs, you know, the Marion County Jail, what have you. What's the civil part?
Well, it's really important to understand the difference here, because a lot of people think that domestic violence is just within the home. And one of the challenges we have on a systemic level is to make it known that this is not a person versus person issue. This needs to come out of the closet, because if it's resulted to just being person on person and a personal issue, then it's really going to take the impact behind it. It is a state of Indiana versus that batterer. And that's important to remember. On a civil issue, the fact that domestic violence exists and that the lethality is higher has a very real impact on a pending family law case, a paternity case, a dissolution case, a custody case. Domestic violence is one of the major factors that must be considered by a judge when they're determining custody of a child. It has important impact all through the civil code as well as the criminal code.
I'm going to ask a dumb question, because sometimes the way you learn is by asking dumb questions.
I teach law students.
If someone is being harassed and threatened, and they're not just threatened in their house or apartment, they're threatened on the job. They're on the job. They're working. All of a sudden, the phone at their desk rings. They pick it up. Somebody on the other end says, "You're either going to do things my way or else." And that threatening and that harassment continues at the workplace. And there may be people listening that's happened to them, but they're afraid to go to their boss or their employer because they figure, well, if I report that, I am going to be in trouble. Is that just something I'm just coming out of my head that's not real world?
I think it's really, really, and there isn't a person in this room. All these people are such experts at this. You have a very powerful room here.
Yeah.
There isn't a person in this room that won't say that domestic violence is different than person-on-person violence. This is intimate partner violence, and family violence is about power and control. It isn't always physical abuse. It's that kind of coercive behavior that you assume to take the power or control away from another person. I want to say that, first of all, and I also want to follow up by saying this is not a mental illness. These are choices that people make to have this kind of relationship with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the impact that it has on survivors, which can be mental, domestic violence is not caused by a mental illness. This is a choice that people make to assume this kind of behavior to take control away from somebody else.
So this is something that not only could be dealt with in a home, but also workplace, school. I haven't even got the school part yet.
Well, to a certain extent, it is bullying. Yeah, you know, there are lots of special populations where this has a significant impact, but it's not the same kind of violence that you're going to see in a bar. It's not the same kind of violence that you're going to see between two people on the street. It is not the intent behind that kind of behavior.
239-1310. 239-1310's after news name is. We have an outstanding panel both here and overseas, up in Northwest Indiana, to help you, to try to talk to as many as possible. Keep your comments short and to the point. Let me start today with, is it Whitney? Hi there.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. What's up?
Okay, I have a question about workplace harassment.
Yeah.
I'm keeping short, try to pull it all to one. I've had a supervisor fill on me for a bra. I've had a girl shove me, and I just recently got terminated from a job because I was shoved from behind, and I, as a reaction, I turned around and shoved him back, and I was told that he wasn't even on the tape to be seen for me to shove him, and then on the write-up, they're saying we accidentally ran into each other, and that was not the case. And I was told that nothing could be done about the supervisor rubbing on me for a bra, and when the girl shoved me, it was on tape, and they didn't do anything about her. And to me, that was Ms. Gross conduct, but she didn't get fired. So what can I do about that?
I think you're going to need to speak with an attorney. An attorney mm-hmm. with expertise in employment law,
mm-hmm.
Because with my manager's hat on, I heard some things that they don't. They teach you in manager training. That's a no-no.
Right.
So you're going to need to speak with legal. You know, talk to an attorney, and they will advise you what your rights are. The other thing is, when you say you were shoved, were you injured in any way?
No, but I was shoved, like, to the point where I jerked forward and, like, not to the ground, but I, like, jerked. Like, are you serious?
I turned around,
and I saw the boy, and I just shoved him.
How long ago was this?
This was in February.
You might. There's nothing wrong with going to the local police station or the police substation in your neighborhood and filing a report.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to keep you, particularly if you're unemployed right now, there's nothing to keep you from filing a police report so they can get that on the record.
And also, they said I can't see the tape. I want to see the tape. And they're saying, well, that's all property now, and I can't see it, but I want to see that tape.
The only person that can see the tape on your behalf would be your legal representative on your behalf.
Okay, so I couldn't see it.
No, you can, and this was not this. You did not have a labor union where you work, correct?
Correct.
No, you cannot see it. Your attorney could.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right, appreciate it. Let me go to Pierre at 239-1310. Hi there.
Oh, good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon
to your panel. I'm so glad you had this show. Hey. Real quickly to the point, one of the things that I believe causes domestic violence, and we see things like this happen all across the country every day in these courts, is visitation violations. Custodial parents keeping children from their parents for whatever reason, and those are the types of things and that can lead to domestic violence. And one of the problems that I have with some of our judges here in Marion County is they routinely allow custodial parents to violate these visitation orders, and that causes frustration, that causes all kinds of problems, it causes problems with the kids. We've got duly elected judges in this city, and y'all know who they are, who allow these things to take place.
All right,
go ahead. What I added another, but go ahead.
Let me ask the panel, you know, is that these tensions that occur when custodial orders are not being obeyed, or one side or another in a custody battle is not following the letter of the judge's instructions, is that a, you know, there really is no mitigating factor to cause domestic violence. But is that something to really look at and make sure everybody's operating according to Hoyle?
I'm not sure if I understood the caller correctly, but did I just hear that keeping somebody from exercising their parenting time is a justification for domestic violence?
No, I don't think, as he said, it was a justification. I think it leads to tensions that could.
Well, certainly, and there are an awful lot of things out there in these high conflict family law cases or any sort of high conflict cases that can lead to tension. When that resorts to domestic violence, that's where I think there's a bit of a leap there. Certainly, if parenting time is being challenged, or if parenting time is being withheld, there are courts that can address that. You can certainly go back to court and address that in a civil way, but a domestic violence response is not appropriate.
All right. You had one
that's
other thing, Pierre, very quickly.
That's not what I was saying.
Okay.
What I'm saying is those are the types of things that lead to domestic violence. In some cases, a lot of times, you know, you got guys showing up to pick up their kids. They get one guy showed up to pick up his kids in Texas and got shot and killed. He's dead. you know, what I'm saying is stop making excuses for some of these custodial parents who are, for the most part, women. A lot of times people make these decisions and they lead to domestic violence. And it's got to stop.
All right,
let me start with these judges.
Lady Vivian Fennell been shaking her head. I think she wants to, you know, get in here. I appreciate it, Pierre. Thank you.
Well, I will yield the floor to Linda since she is a lawyer. However, Pierre, you don't know if there was a protective order and that person was not supposed to pick up the kids on their property. You don't know if that woman had been harassed over the phone or been sent all types of things. Remember, again, domestic violence is about power and control, about intimidation and manipulation. Therefore, there are a lot of factors that go into things that occur. And we can read things in the paper and try to assume that we know the reasons why, but that's not always a good thing for us to do. Again, as Carrie said, yeah. You have the law on your side, and that's the way you deal with it.
239-1310. Did anybody else want to add anything before I take a break?
I did.
Don't be shy. Come on. Come on, Linda.
I wanted to make sure that all of our listeners understand domestic violence is a choice. There is nothing that anyone can cause you to do unless you're acting in self-defense to make you cause harm to another individual. As a community, we have to get out of this mindset that people are being acted upon and that's what causes them to do things. We are adults who make decisions every day on the wrong and the right way to handle things. You wouldn't necessarily go to your job, and if your boss makes you mad, pull out a gun and shoot him. So why do we ask questions like this that suggest that there are some sort of triggers or something that a person can do that would justify being acted upon in a violent way?
239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos. We're talking domestic violence. See, the other shows don't talk about stuff like this. They talk about fluff. We talk about serious stuff. Maya Angelou, 2 o'clock hour Wednesday, plus Clarence Page, award-winning columnist for the Chicago Tribune. We're also talking to him on Wednesday. We've got people that are going to come and talk to us about the Common Core curriculum, why it's important, or is it important to get rid of it? All this and more on a very busy week as we try to single-handedly try to bring spring in. It's Afternoons with Amos, brought to you in part by the Indiana Civil Rights Commission. 239-1310. 239-1310's Afternoons with Amos. Back to the phones. And Doris, hi there. Doris, you're on the air. Yes, you're on the air. What's up?
Okay, I was too close to myself to the radio. But anyway, I am a life skills facilitator, and I go to some of the battered women's shelters in the city. But what I'm finding out is that a lot of women do not actually show up in the battered women's shelters. And so what I was trying to find out is if anybody on the panel ever refers people to shelters, or if they refer them to get any kind of educational and any other kind of educational programs, or refer them to even, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists.
It sounds like you're here and you've got the skills and you want to help, and folks, you're not making the connection to help folks. Is that what I'm hearing?
Right.
All right.
Exactly.
Sure. When individuals come into our facility, the Salvation Army Center, again, it's choices. And the resources are given to the individual depending on their individual need, if they're looking for counseling, group support, anything that the individual needs for her and her family, then we will give them the resource. But again, it's a choice. Nothing is mandated. No one is mandated to go to group, go to classes, but they are giving the resources that if they do want to do that.
But there are other organizations out there for battered women. And, okay, the Salvation Army offers that information and offers those classes. But there are other organizations out there that are taking in battered women or battered women with family. And they don't have those other resources out there. They're just like, some of them are just housing people. Until, you know, they can get them or they can get themselves together for a few minutes. But I think education is one of the key matters to helping lift a lot of these families out of those domestic violence situations,
all right,
including the men.
Let me let Julie Marsh and then Tracy Mitchell-Strong wants to weigh in on your question, Doris. Great question.
Doris, I agree absolutely. Education is really important, and that's, I think, we kind of look at the prevention side. How do we kind of nip this in the bud? In terms of intervention and support, the reality is there aren't enough service providers to go around to help everyone, and we do have waiting lists. But we also have, I think, one of the greatest resources in Central Indiana, and actually it's across the state now, 211, which, again, can't always, 100, can they 100% of the time find the resource for the person? No. But they can tie people at this point across the entire state with resources and help. And I think that calling that as a one shop stop kind of a concept is the place to start for folks. But I agree, we need to do a lot more with prevention, and we need to start from the time kids are tiny.
Tracy Mitchell-Strong?
Yes, I wanted to just add that within our program, when we are working with parents, we do have case coaches that work with them on a one-to-one basis to help them find different resources to assist with whatever needs it is that they are facing. But yes, we do that. We do work with the parents just so that they don't feel isolated.
Lady Fennell?
Well, I would just like to suggest if there are places in our community that are housing women and they do not offer these educational or resource type programs, that they tie into 211, because to house them and not have those type of things in place is really not doing them the justice that they deserve.
Should we also know these places that aren't providing those services and make sure that they're not off the radar screen? Because it sounds like Doris has had experience with these places, and maybe, you know, maybe not do it on the air, but maybe let the Domestic Violence Network and let the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence and Not to Believers Like Us, let these organizations know who's out here just warehousing and not providing, hey, here's some information, or here's 211, or get 211 on the phone while they're there.
Thank you, Amos. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Tracy, go ahead.
I would just like for Doris, if she has a PIN available, she can call into our hotline number, which is 317-519-3839. And we do have representatives available that would love to take her information and have it so that we can refer our families to her if she's willing to assist.
Now, that's 519-3839?
That is correct.
Doris, you get that?
I did not.
So. Okay. You ready?
I did not, because I'm looking for a pen and I'm not finding one.
Well, hold it. Doris, you listen to the radio?
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm going to give it in 2 minutes. That'll give you time to get the pen, okay?
Okay. I'm running inside right now to grab a pen. Go ahead. I'm ready right now.
All right. Well, you ready now?
Yep.
519-3839.
And you can also send me an email at linda.major@indy.gov. Our advocates are constantly looking for ways to expand our resource list and would be happy to get in contact with you.
All right, Doris.
And this is Julie.
Hold on. This is Julie Marsh. I also want to talk to you real quick.
Right now we're in the process of doing an assessment of all the training and educational programs that are being offered by service providers that we can find in Central Indiana. And by next year, we'll actually have a clearinghouse on our website at dvnconnect.org. So we're trying to get it organized so that folks can find out who's out there, what's they're offering, and how can you get it.
All right. Appreciate it. Okay. Thank you. Let me go to Larry at 239-1310. Hi there.
You know, Amos, this is really serious. I said one time that the state of Indiana was a junkie factory. Here's what I mean.
Okay.
Every little nook and cranny in this state has some service that's going to lead you to a decision to take some kind of drug. They know that. They know that's the process. They are looking at the people that are vulnerable and have fallen on hard times as a resource, to resource their body out, to resource their housing. It's as a resource that they can make a profit on, and these are just the people who are the front for these organizations. They're out here beating the drums, trying to drum up business to make their jobs necessary so that they're grant-based, so they've got to make their jobs necessary. So they should be ashamed of themselves every time they come on, every year, getting deeper and deeper. But what they're really here for is to enforce the new Violence Against Women and Children's Act. They're going to make women and children pariahs in our society that can no longer be lived with or even...
Larry. Sister Fennell, help me out here. Help a brother out.
Well, Larry, I would like to say I can at least speak for not-to-believers like us. We are not grant-funded. We are donation-based. So we owe no man anything but love. And so the work that we do is not to make anybody a pariah or anyone a host or anything else like that. Now, the other agencies that are here, even though they may be grant-based or have grants, you know, we could be doing a lot of other things than the things that we're doing. And we're doing this to protect men, women, and children and our society as a whole. Now, I know you don't agree with me, Larry, and I really appreciate that you have your opinion, but my opinion is you're wrong.
And let me bring in Dr. Casanova. Is what you just heard from Larry symptomatic of some of the attitudes in communities of color?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We, as was just mentioned, we could be doing quite a bit more. And I think that if he were to see and put faces, the faces of the victims, this would really hit home for him that this is not individuals trying to keep a job or keep grants coming in, but these are real people, real lives that are being touched on a regular basis. And as one of the panelists said previously, we use the term domestic violence, but it's a family. All members of the family can be affected by this, children as well. And even if the children were not direct victims, we refer to them as invisible victims. They are impacted. Their lives are impacted.
Can this also divide families? Can this lead to a Hatfield-McCoy type situation in a family, Doc?
Define families, yes. Define individuals. Some individuals that are raised in this environment, this is what they know, and this is it tends to be a pattern where this is all I know, and that because this is where the environment I'm in. As they grow, if intervention is not received for these children, they grow up themselves into being victims continually as well.
Back to the phones and Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Well, I was just wondering if the information that you guys have been talking about, especially with the workplace harassment and things of that sort, does any of that apply to federal employees? Or is this stuff that's only for state and local?
Let me put it this way. Let me be very clear. The harassment we were talking about is if you're in a situation with a spouse or a partner, boyfriend, acquaintance, and they're belittling you, abusing you, threatening you, they're doing it at home, and then it carries over to the workplace, then if you're a federal employee, yes, those kinds of things would apply to a federal workplace. Yes.
Hey, that's all I had. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate it. You wanted to add?
I was just going to say there is a remedy that's available for employers out there that are working with employees that may be survivors and or victims. They can get a workplace violence restraining order, which is similar to a protective order. It's actually codified under the Indiana Civil Protective Order Act, but it's a remedy for employers that allow them to get a workplace violence restraining order for their entire facility on behalf of their employees, so it doesn't result in that employee having to go out and get a civil protective order. They can protect their workplace that way.
So if the company was a humane company, the employee could go to HR, could go to the boss, and then the boss could get the order, not singling out the one employee, but protecting all of his or her employees.
Right. And a lot of employers, especially larger facilities, have safety plans, and they have workplace violence restraining order provisions in their own employees.
And our legislature did that?
No, our individual employers.
Oh, individual employers can do that.
Yes.
But that's an Indiana law.
Absolutely.
So the legislature actually did something decent for it. 239-1310, 239-1310 this afternoon. Amos, let me go to Robin, then we'll take a break. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a question. I wanted to know, I'm involved with a domestic case now, but the domestic abuse case also turned into the girl bringing back someone to, and they shot three times in my home. And I asked my detective, would she be charged with anything? And they're saying no. They're not for sure what they can charge her with. But shouldn't she be charged with something since she sent someone back that actually sent three bullets in my home?
So wait a minute. Some woman
came to my home.
The woman came to your home and allegedly, I have to say allegedly because it's a legal thing, allegedly did what?
She came in my home. It was my daughter's boyfriend's baby daddy, and okay. We ended up fighting this girl, and we did a police report. Mm-hmm. But then later on that night, they came back and shot into my home.
Someone, you don't know exactly who shot in the home, but somebody shot in the home, correct?
Yes. I do now because they showed us the video, and he's now been locked up, but they don't know what they're going to charge her with, and she brought them to my home.
How do you know? What proof do you have that she brought them to your house?
Because her mother called the boyfriend's grandmother, which called my daughter and told us that they switched cars and they were on their way back to our house. So we was looking out the window, saw the car pull up, and they shot their daughter.
Does the detective have all this information, all the names?
Yes, he's the one who showed me the video.
All right. Have you spoken with a deputy prosecutor?
No, they haven't gave me a prosecutor yet.
How long ago did this happen?
January the 17th.
Oh, there ought to be a prosecutor on this by now.
And I think it is, but they haven't directly gave me anyone. And I've called him the other day trying to see what's going on. And he's saying, well, the guy is locked up, but they're going to charge the girl.
You worried about, and I get that. Here's what I'd like you to do off the air, because I have a prosecutor in the house, but I don't want to get her in a jam.
Okay.
What I would like to do is I'm going to put you on hold, and Chris, the person that you talked to when you called me,
okay,
if you would give Chris your name,
yes,
and a phone number where you can be reached during the day,
okay,
then I will turn that over to the prosecutor's office.
Okay.
And I'm willing to bet you easier than a 16 seed can beat a 1 seed that someone from the prosecutor's office will get back to you and try to get some of that information from you, okay?
Okay.
So hold on and give that information to Chris. That'll allow me to take a break at 239-1310. 239-1310. We're talking about domestic violence. Give us a call or send me an email at praiseindy.com or a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. It's Afternoons with Amos after these. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. Back to the phones. And let me go to Catherine. Hi there.
Hello.
How are you?
Yes. I was just wondering, because I've heard a lot of women say that when they get angry, And they, you know, they said, well, I can just put you in jail. I'll just tell them that you hit me, and I'll just put you in jail. And then the man gets locked up, and then, you know, he's not, until he's proven guilty, you know, he's locked up. And I think they're using the law sometimes like frivolous, and some states have where they lock both of the people up that's in this allocation, and then they can tell if, you know, they will see then, you know, has anything been done or give them a chance to cool off. And I know this one state, they don't have people calling when they just frivolous like that because they know that both of them are going to jail. So most of their cases are the real McCoy.
That's an interesting point. How would you address Catherine, you know, if somebody, you know, calls the police and the charge is not necessarily, you know, frivolous, and the police takes the person that makes the call story?
Well, last I checked, you know, most officers really do require probable cause to make an arrest. And most of the officers that respond to scenes of domestic, they usually do not arrest if it's a he said, she said sort of thing. I mean, it has to be a little tougher than that.
So
a lot of time, because I had policeman told me he had to take the person down because, you know, they have to treat it as if, you know, even though he himself was angry at the girl and said that, you know, just sit down and be quiet because she just kept woofing off. And he knew, you know, but he said that he had to do his job and take him down anyway.
Was he – well, let me ask you a question. Was – when this person was arrested, were they charged with anything?
But he got out, and he wasn't charged. But, I mean, this is why I'm calling, because Indianapolis women done got so when they get into an argument or something with the man, they'll just say that to get the man locked up. And see, you can't get out until you go to court and get proven.
Well, no, you can get out when you go to court and make bail.
After
well, yeah,
hours.
I mean, who wants to be paying out some money when they didn't do nothing?
Well, if you've never, the other thing is, if you've never been in trouble with the law before, 90 times out of 100, you can walk without having to pay anything. It's called on your own recognizance.
Yeah, you can do that, but then when you do go back to court, they still try. They get this $50 fee out of you for the some kind of process, even though you didn't do anything.
You got to pay $50 if you found not guilty in a court of law.
It's a processing fee.
It's a processing fee.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Is this a problem of false reporting?
But I'm
thinking well, no. Let me ask my guest here. Is false reporting a problem in this town, in this community, in terms of you know, is false reporting a problem?
I think that false reporting exists in all types of cases. I can tell you that from a prosecutor's office perspective. Because of how serious and significant an impact domestic violence has on our community, those cases are taken very seriously, and actually they are prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. So if someone is going to make up a false report and it fits within the statute, we will file those charges for false crime reporting. Domestic violence has ramifications that are so far-reaching in our community with children, with family members, with the victims, and really with the offenders themselves, that we have absolutely no tolerance for individuals who make false reports. I can tell you that the number of cases that I've come across in my career involving false crime reporting are very, very few and far between. The reason that I can say that is because a lot of times there is tangible evidence, such as pictures, such as neighbors who have heard things, such as a person who's accidentally pocket called. Now, when I started, we didn't really have cell phones that much. But now you can get anything across a cell phone in an instant with texts and everything. So the amount of evidence that's actually out there on many of these cases exists and strongly suggests that the number of false crime reporting cases is very, very low.
Is a charge of domestic violence, it can just be verbal?
Well,
Is verbal the hardest one to deal with?
It depends. When you say verbal, we have charges such as intimidation, where if somebody threatens to do something such as serious bodily injury to someone, if they don't do something that they either have a right to do or they try to prevent them from doing something they have a right to do, then that is a felony offense. But even with that, our office would be looking for what we call corroborating evidence to support what it is that's said. So, yes, domestic violence includes verbal, physical. Our office does not charge for crimes that involve emotional abuse, but anything that has to do with physical or verbal abuse that would actually meet a charge that violates a statute, yes, we could file.
Let me go to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Yes, how you doing?
I'm fine, sir.
Hey, I just want to piggyback off that lady that just called.
Uh-huh.
About that false reporting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a problem with false reporting, because I want to know, how can a lady do a lot of stuff, say a lot of things, call that 911, say a lot of things, get you arrested, put you through the system, and then don't show up for court? Now, who's the victim now? You got this guy that's been arrested, mm-hmm. but not convicted, but arrested for domestic violence.
Right.
And is on his record. The lady did not even show up for court. Now, what does that guy supposed to do?
That's it. Now you raised a totally different question. Let me first ask Carrie Blomquist, because I think implicit in the caller's question is what comes up on this show a lot, where people are being denied employment because of an arrest record and the charges were either dropped or the person was found not guilty. So I think implicit, he's got one question that's implicit, the other question that's real. which is somebody gets called in and the person never comes to testify, which means that the charges, I would assume, are thrown out.
Okay.
But the arrest is still on the record. It doesn't necessarily look good to an employer.
Okay. First of all, I really do want to say that nobody gets another person arrested. There is no mandatory arrest statute in this state. In the state of Indiana, there is no mandatory arrest statute for domestic violence. So when officers make an arrest, they make an arrest based on probable cause. And that's a determination that they independently find. They don't have to make an arrest at every domestic. So the person that reports a crime doesn't get another person arrested. They reported a crime and police made an arrest.
They made an arrest.
Okay.
Proven before, it's dismissed.
Okay, so.
It's dismissed. That means you're not guilty. Or are you guilty before it's dismissed?
Dismiss means it didn't go to trial, so we didn't actually have a not guilty finding.
Okay, so on your record, you're still an arrest.
You have an arrest, perhaps, yes, but not a conviction.
Okay, so how do I get rid of that arrest?
You don't.
The person didn't even have, be like, hey, please help me, state of Indiana. Please help me, Marion County. But she doesn't even show up to court. So this guy, not guilty, dismissed, still have an arrest
on
his record.
You don't get the arrests are not taken off. For anybody.
And I can also tell you that there are a number of reasons that people who are victims of crime do not show up for court, whether it's fear, whether it's love. I can tell you that over the last 17 years, I have listened to more than my fair share of jail calls where the abuser will, day after day, 15-minute after 15-minute phone block, harass, coerce, persuade the victim not to show up to court. So...
The lady knows about this. The lady knows about the system. The lady knows this is what's going to happen.
Okay. It sounds to me like you may be talking about a specific case, and all we can say is what we've said.
Let me make this hypothetical, because I think implicit in his call, and we talk about in domestic violence and abuse and harassment, this could be thought of with some people as a form of abuse only because employers treat arrests, whether the charges are dropped, whether they're found not guilty, as the same as being guilty. And that's just the reality of the real world, particularly as it impacts African Americans, particularly, and maybe to I'm not in the Hispanic community, so I can't speak for them. But this is a growing problem among African Americans where employers take the arrest. I've had people call this show who say they have been fired after a background check shows an arrest that had no disposition of a conviction.
I'm not sure about the individual policies of employers, but I can say that, as Carrie began to say, that police officers will only arrest if there's probable cause. And I can tell you also that our ethical responsibility as prosecutors is really to only file those cases where there is a reasonable likelihood of conviction. So when we make that screening standard decision, by the time we get to a point where a case is filed, we have some pretty credible, strong evidence that suggests
to take it to trial.
That's right. So the fallout from that would be, I guess, things that other agencies might.
Are there cases where, when you look at the screening process, even though the officer felt there was probable cause, you looked at it and said, nah, we ain't got it here, it's not here, and throw the case out?
Absolutely. We have a significant percentage of cases every year that we no file. And what that means is there's not enough evidence to go forward, whether that's because we're lacking in physical evidence or we're lacking in additional witness testimony. There are quite a few cases every year that we do not file because we don't have enough.
239-1310. 239-1310 is Afternoon's name. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. I got an email, and we'll read when we come back at 239-1310 is Afternoon's name for a Monday.